A recent report examining the skills gap in Wisconsin found there is no skills gap in Wisconsin. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, June 13th. We'll talk with one of the co-authors of the report, which was issued by the Robert M. La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, about the phenomenon dubbed the skills gap, a term that describes a lack of qualified, skilled workers to fill available positions. And we'll talk about why the researchers say, for the most part, the skills gap does not exist. Some state lawmakers, like Republican State Senator Sheila Harsdorf, dispute the findings.
So while you can look at paper data, when we're hearing directly from the employers that they're having a hard time filling positions that they have open, I think that that's pretty sound.
So are you in an industry that is looking for skilled workers but can't find them? Why don't businesses train new hires themselves anyway? Should this be the role of tech colleges with taxpayer assistance? Are industries that are looking for skilled workers offering adequate wages? We'll welcome your thoughts, questions, and experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Phil Sletten is one of four UW-Madison graduate students who worked on this report, Examining the Skills Gap in Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me on the show, and thanks for your interest in the topic.
Well, thank you for being with us, and I will also credit a listener during our June open line who caught news of this report and thought it would be a good discussion, and we agreed. So that's thanks to the listener during our listener suggestion program. But let's why did you and your co-authors examine the skills gap in Wisconsin?
So we were all graduate students at the La Follette School of Public Affairs. My co-authors were Ben Nierad, Megan Loritz, and Jen Kuna. And we are at school. We are given a plate of options, essentially, that our professors had collected in terms of policy topics that we could study for our final capstone project. And these topics are submitted by external clients. One very, I think, neat thing that the La Follette School of Public Affairs does is look to outside clients to give us policy analysis project topics. So we all selected the topic submitted by the Wisconsin Legislative Council as one of our top choices. And the Wisconsin Legislative Council wanted us to look at the skills gap in Wisconsin. It was a very broad mandate, essentially take a look and see what you can find, and we did our best over the course of the semester.
And so talk a little bit more on how you examined the skills gap. What did you look at?
Sure. So there were three main parts to our analysis. Well, first we reviewed the literature, but when we were doing our analysis, we looked at three major areas. One is we looked at an indicator analysis, essentially looking at data that was available about, as most recent as we could get, current-day data on unemployment by education level, and for people that were employed in certain occupations, what their level of education was. So, for example, if someone's employed in a certain occupation, do they have an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, or a master's degree, et cetera? And then we did an analysis of educational attainment overall in Wisconsin projected from 2012 to 2020. We used the Department of Workforce Development's projections for what the demand for positions would be for each occupation, so essentially what employers are looking for and how many positions will be open in each occupation, and then looked at the educational attainment of those occupations, required by those occupations, and then compared that demand level, which broken down into educational attainment, again, associates, bachelor's, master's degrees, to the supply coming out of Wisconsin institutions. And then we made adjustments for migration and labor force participation. And then the third part of the analysis was a specific look at nine different occupations that had the highest demand levels and required some level of educational attainment, again, based on what the Department of Workforce Development assigned as an educational attainment level for a typical worker entering that occupation.
And the headline says, essentially, you found there is no skills gap in Wisconsin.
Right. So the indicator analysis and the projection of educational attainment essentially found no skills gap. I can speak about the indicator analysis first. The educational attainment levels did not change overall what the unemployment rate was in recent years relative to past years. So the unemployment rate is still higher for each educational attainment level in Wisconsin. And then there are also occupations that don't require something more than a high school degree. So you can have a high school degree or less and be, say, a retail salesperson or a bartender. And we found that the percent of the population of say, retail salespersons, people employed as retail salespersons, that had an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree or more, was about 60%, which may make you a better retail salesperson, but to suggest that you are more qualified than you need to be for that position, again, based on the numbers that the Department of Workforce Development puts forward and what they suggest is the educational attainment level. Bartenders, also, you may be a better bartender if you have a bachelor's degree, but 13% of bartenders and 44% of, excuse me, 13% of bartenders have a bachelor's degree and 44% have an associate's degree or some college. So it may make you a better bartender, mm-hmm. but that doesn't suggest a skills gap. And the projection analysis of overall educational attainment also found that the jobs that are going to be in demand, again, projected by the Department of Workforce Development in Wisconsin between 2012 and 2020, are going to be heavily favored on the jobs that only require a high school degree or less. And we are producing in Wisconsin quite a large number of folks with some certificate or some college experience, bachelor's degrees, associate's degrees, master's degrees. And based on the projections that we made, based on recent trends of how many graduates we are going to be producing at each education level, we are going to have, again, based on our projections, far more bachelor's degrees and associate's degrees and master's degrees and people with some college than are necessary for the positions that will be opening up and the typical level of education that are required for those positions.
Then how do you reconcile statements like Senator Harsdorf that businesses are telling her and others that they cannot fill available positions right now because they can't find qualified applicants?
Well, so our study doesn't rule out any skills gap whatsoever at some level. We looked at, specifically when we were looking at our nine occupations, we looked at the nine occupations that are specific skills for specific jobs. So you get a computer science degree and you go into computer and information systems, where we did find a skills gap, by the way, or we projected a skills gap between 2012 and 2020. So there are places where there could be skills gaps in the economy in the present day. It's really hard to figure out in a snapshot of the present day where these skills gaps may be. And that's a difficult task. But it could be that we have situations where employers may be looking for something very specific that maybe the educational system doesn't have a very specific degree for, or it could be that employers are finding skills gaps, and the question is how large are they, and are they are they skills gaps that are large enough to warrant moving state policy? They may be, they may not be. That's up for state legislators to decide.
And so essentially there could be some pockets of skills gaps right now, but your report is a little bit more forward-looking as to whether the jobs that are going to be in demand in the near future are going to have enough applicants for them.
Absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Our report seeks to say in the next, you know, most of this decade, where are we going to have problems in terms of educational attainment? There may be other ways to measure skills, but the best way that we have to measure skills is educational attainment. And do you have an associate's degree in this field, for example? Do you have a master's degree in this field? And that's the best way that we could determine to measure whether you have the skills to enter the workforce for a certain occupation. And that is the best way, at least as far as we could determine, that the state could determine or could promote a higher skilled workforce. So the skills gap may be hidden somewhere in there in the educational attainment levels, and there could be a mismatch between educational attainment and what the specific skills are desired by the employers. But based on the best measurements that we have, which is, do you have the degree for this position, we didn't find any major skills gaps except for in computer science and information technology and in human resources.
We are talking about the skills gap this hour, the term that's used to describe a lack of skilled applicants for jobs in certain industries. We're talking with one of the co-authors, a UW-Madison graduate student, of a report that examines the skills gap in Wisconsin and says that, essentially, there isn't one. What do you think? What questions do you have? Do you happen to work for a business that isn't seeing enough qualified applicants for job openings? Are you seeing a skills gap in any way? How about your own job search? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Checking our weather forecast for today. In Wisconsin, mostly sunny with highs in the low to mid 70s. It will be in the mid to upper 60s near the Great Lakes. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network coming up this afternoon. After 3 on At Issue, join John Munson and his guest as they discuss how the millennial generation is shaping our world. John says millennials have reinvented the American dream and no longer aspire to the old definition of success and prosperity. This is an encore presentation of At Issue with John Munson this afternoon after 3. We are talking this hour about the skills gap. Some employers have said it's difficult to fill positions with skilled applicants. It's a phenomenon known as the skills gap. We are talking with one of the co-authors of a new report out from the University of Wisconsin-Madison that says that the skills gap really doesn't exist. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Phil Sletten is one of 4 UW-Madison graduate students who worked on this report titled Examining the Skills Gap in Wisconsin. We have posted information about it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's take some calls. We have John in Richland County with us first. Hello, John.
Good morning, Joy. Excellent reporting.
Well, thank you.
I agree with your guest. I think Wisconsin is the best industrial capital of the Midwest. I had became an expert in computer intelligence after graduating from a 2-year college with a 3.98 grade point average. I was hired directly into Unisys, which is a large computer company.
Mm-hmm.
And then I traveled around the United States, and I wanted to stay home by my family, so I went to GE Medical in Waukesha, building CAT scanners for 1 year. There's the world headquarters where they build CAT scanners. And then they hired me directly into magnetic resonance imaging computer engineering for 5 years.
Yeah, and John, so are you seeing that, are your employers finding enough skilled workers to fill the available openings?
Yes, Wisconsin is the best for that.
Yeah. Is Wisconsin the best for that, Phil? Do you know?
Well, I do know that Wisconsin, in terms of manufacturing, is more heavily reliant on manufacturing than most other states. We sometimes swap places with Indiana for first. But in terms of educational attainment, we project that Wisconsin is going to have more talented workers, at least in terms of what sort of degree they have, than we will need based on the projections set forth by the Department of Workforce Development for the educational attainment levels that we will need to fill the positions here. So in that situation, Wisconsin is in pretty good shape, and more industry might be attracted here, more high-tech industry, more high-innovation industry may be attracted here by the workforce if our projections hold, because we will have the bachelor's degrees and master's degrees and associate's degrees available.
Thank you very much, John, for your call and your story. Richard and Nina is with us. Hello, Richard.
Hi. What I wanted to talk about a little bit was you have employers who would like people very, very, with very specific training or experience. To use kind of an example, let's suppose they had a Mercedes dealership. I'd like someone with experience to work on Mercedes. And someone applies for a job who's got experience with Porsches and BMWs and Volkswagens and other German cars. But no, that's not good enough. That's not the right training. I want someone experienced in Mercedes. I think there's a lot of that going on. As if I were an employer, sure, why not get someone who can start tomorrow? In other words, abrogate the responsibility for training and just complain about people aren't well enough trained already.
Mm. Do we know if that's happening, Phil?
Well, some of the literature suggests that there may be this phenomenon of employers looking for very specific employees. We did not look at that specifically in our study. Some of the literature does suggest that may be happening. But economic theory suggests that if demand is high enough for a product, then employers should be willing to pay more to train their workers in that specific product. And it may be that demand has not increased to the level necessary to warrant employers wanting to train their workers or being as willing to train their workers in a specific industry with a specific training than they were in the past. That could be a phenomenon, but the flip side of that is that these are tough economic times. We are competing with other states. We're competing internationally. And it may be that in a new economic reality, employers may not have the ability to compete and train their workers in the same fashion that they used to. However, if demand is high enough, if demand returns to the levels that we've seen in the past in the economy, then employers, again, economic theory suggests, would be willing to train their workers in a specific Mercedes part as opposed to BMW or Porsche, for example.
Yeah, but what we are seeing now in Wisconsin is a move toward more of these retraining programs, like with tech colleges and that sort of thing, where maybe because of the skills gap, employers want the tech colleges to crank out more Mercedes mechanics.
And the state, if the state chooses to, can cooperate with employers on cranking out more skilled workers with specific skill sets. That is a policy decision. The state could decide to do that. Indeed, that's not far from our recommendations. We like the idea, in terms of the recommendations of our report, we like the idea of more flexible programs that allow people to enter education and leave education for the workforce or, relative to prior education more smoothly than they can at this time. And in that circumstance, then having a program that can take someone either right out of the workforce or right out of high school and train them in a very specific thing that some specific employers may want is not a bad thing by any means. If the state decides that that's the sort of policy that it wants to move forward with, then it's a cost-benefit analysis for the state. Is it worth it for us to devote taxpayer dollars to training workers for a specific industry? It may be, it may be not. It depends on what state policymakers decide.
Yeah. Well, we just have another minute or so before a news break. What's another recommendation based on your report?
So we recommend, first of all, so that there aren't these sort of disagreements over whether there is a skills gap or not, that the Department of Workforce Development try to harness supply and demand, as we did in our report, in the labor market information system that they're setting forward. And then second, we make recommendations about easing transitions into the workforce from either high school or higher levels of education or the workforce back into education. And then we also recommend that the state look at ways to promote demand for high-skilled labor in the state, people with bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, et cetera, since we seem to have a surplus of those, according to our projections.
We are talking with Phil Sletten, one of four UW-Madison graduate students who worked on this report, Examining the Skills Gap in Wisconsin. We welcome your questions about the findings of the report and the recommendations of the report and your own experiences. Have you seen a skills gap in Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. Coming up after 7, by the way, we are going to take a look at that legislation that passed in the state Senate yesterday, is scheduled to be taken up in the state assembly today, that would force women to have an ultrasound before they could have an abortion. That's after 7. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with a guest about a recent report that examines the skills gap in Wisconsin that found there really isn't a large skills gap in Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, June 13th. If you have a question about this report, Examining the Skills Gap in Wisconsin, we welcome it at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Phil Sletten, one of four UW-Madison graduate students who worked on the report Examining the Skills Gap in Wisconsin. The report was recently issued by the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. We have callers who have been waiting, so let's go back to the phones. Christina in Dane County is with us. Hello, Christina.
Hello. My comment is that the educational attainment here in Wisconsin is very, very high, but I believe it, through my experience, that employers are experiencing a skills gap, not so much because there aren't skilled people out there, but because they're not willing to train those skilled people in the skills that they don't have that are specific to the business. Their expectations are unrealistic for even high school graduates, college graduates, technical school graduates, because they're expecting someone coming out of school to be ready to jump right into their business and know exactly what to do. In my business, which is customer service, even the most practiced person cannot go from one business to another without having a certain learning curve. You cannot go from one set of rules, per se, to another set of rules without having to learn some different ways of handling situations. And there are even in the technical jobs where they are using very specific software and very specific hardware systems that may not be available to the schools to use in training or teaching, or are cost prohibitive for the schools. So for employers, I think that they may be experiencing that skills gap because not because the people aren't out there, but because they're not having realistic expectations or having those training programs necessary in order to meet the real-world needs with the possible education that people are getting in the schools.
And Christina, have you run into this personally?
I have run into this personally. I have been involved in hiring, and even at the very basic levels of customer service, when you get someone out of high school who's going to be standing in front of your customers every single day, they don't have the communication skills necessary when they first walk in the door. They don't know how to handle a customer who's unhappy or how to handle a customer who has special needs. And those are all things that you have to learn on the job for each individual company because every company handles it differently.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for sharing that. Well, Phil, that brings to mind that even if tomorrow's graduates have the necessary degree, that there could still be some businesses that don't believe that degree is adequate for the specific skills needed.
Right, so Christina's call brings up two really interesting points. One is that, again, the willingness of employers to train employees. And unfortunately, we don't have good metrics for that. There's not good data out there on how willing employers are to train employees, to invest a lot in employees. And, of course, it's hard to collect that data because it changes from employer to employer in terms of how much training is needed, how much investment is needed. So that would be an interesting area of study, but not something that we were able to look at in our study and not something that we found any quantitative metrics for in the literature because there's not good data out there on that. There are some survey data, but nothing conclusive. And the second point that Christina brings up is that that employers have talked about a lack of soft skills is what it's generally termed as, where people that are newly minted graduates may not have the people skills or may not have the sort of professional world training skills that these employers desire coming out of school. And that's another area where it's difficult to assess what policies should be changed, if any, to address this gap. It's also very difficult to quantify. Of course, if soft skills were easy to quantify, then hard skills would be even easier, and we wouldn't necessarily be having a skills gap discussion. So this issue of soft skills is one that's interesting, is one that there's some literature out there on, but no really thorough studies, because it is so difficult to quantify and so difficult to determine what sort of policies could be changed in educational institutions for these soft skills to be bolstered. But as Christina suggests, maybe the onus is on the employers. Maybe that's how it has been historically, and maybe that's how it should continue to be. But it's difficult to say because, again, we can't do the sort of direct quantitative comparisons that we would like to do.
So let's talk a little bit more about your report. Found essentially there was no large looming skills gap, but yet you have recommendations. Why? What do we need to change if there's not a skills gap?
So, we think that the importance of this data is that we're having this discussion, mm-hmm. right? We've presented this new batch of data, and other studies have looked at very similar issues and come to some different conclusions as to the size of the skills gap. So as opposed to disagreeing about methodology or finding the differences and figuring out exactly how big a skills gap may be in a certain industry, we think that the Department of Workforce Development, or the state more broadly, should put together a system that would provide this labor market information in real time. And so, for example, our data was data from 2000 to 2011 in terms of the college graduates or the graduates from Wisconsin education institutions. And that data, I mean, that's a little older than we'd prefer, right, if we're talking mm-hmm. about a skills gap this month. So we think that if Wisconsin were able to find ways to directly get that data in terms of the expected number of graduates in each different field from Wisconsin educational institutions directly, and then able to compare that supply of graduates, that supply of skilled labor, to demand projections that may be updated more frequently than they are now. I mean, they're very thorough demand projections, but if we want to have a fast-moving labor market information system, then having demand projections that are updated more frequently may be helpful as well. And we could determine where skills gaps are likely to be, again, several years in advance, and then adjust policy as necessary, as state legislators see as necessary, to adapt to that ahead of time. There are other things we could use that information for. For example, there could be a sort of a slush fund of money for graduate, or I should say, for scholarships for people that are seeking a degree, whether it's an associate's degree, bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, so that they are able to graduate and enter the workforce with that degree. And I say slush fund because you could move that money around to help graduates or help students in these different degree fields based on what the projections are, thereby making it easier for people to enter that field financially. So having that market information is something that we think would be really valuable. And right now, my understanding is that the Department of Workforce Development is looking at submissions for the labor market information system, and we hope that they take this sort of real-time data into consideration.
Let me take Laura in Madison next. Hello, Laura.
Hi. I wanted to talk about the case of welders in particular right now. The state of Wisconsin has often had manufacturers coming up and saying that they can't find welders for their plants. And yet, apparently, there are a lot of out-of-work welders out there. Real wages apparently for welders has dropped by like about 20%. It just seems to me, wouldn't they want to offer more money maybe to attract more people? I mean, that's what they do in executive positions.
I want our guests to address the wages too, but I'm wondering if you said you looked in areas of high demand or anticipated high demand. Was welding one of them?
Yeah, so we looked at areas of high demand where the Department of Workforce Development assigned some level of educational attainment beyond high school to that occupation. And the occupation that includes welders, because it's a collection of a few different occupations, but the occupation that includes welders has demand between 4 and 5,000 projected from 2010 to 2020. But the Department of Workforce Development does not label it as one that requires some level of education, or the typical worker doesn't enter with a level of education beyond the high school diploma. So we were not able to measure the supply and demand adequately, because if someone enters the workforce with a high school diploma, we can't tell what they're qualified for or not qualified for, because it's not a specific type of degree. They're not looking at a specific field, for example. I'm sure there are programs in the state that do train someone to be a welder that are at the associate's degree level or the certificate level, but that was not in an area where the Department of Workforce Development identified a certain level of higher education necessary, and we were only able to parse out where the skills were in the workforce for certain degrees. So that was not one of the high demand occupations at which we looked. At the wage issue, though, this was not an issue that we were able to delve into as much as we would have liked. In our report, but we can say that that wages are important when someone is considering whether or not to be employed. And some of the literature that we reviewed argued that if you are looking at a welding job and that offers maybe $12 or $15 an hour, and you have to go through a certain amount of training, right, if you're expected to go get a certificate and then go take that welding job, then you may be considering that, but you may also be considering a job in the service industry at a fast food restaurant or as a store clerk, and that may also pay the $12 to $15 an hour range. And in that situation, it may not seem worth it to go and get a certificate and then go become a welder. Now, again, we did not find that specifically in our study. That's just what some of the literature was suggesting may be happening out there, but at the same time, there are others who point to higher wages for certain workers that are in demand. So it's difficult to say. Our study did not look specifically at wages, but there is some discussion out here about wages and whether wages impact the size of the skills gap, and then that may be, again, a demand issue. If there's not enough demand in the economy, to warrant higher wages, then employers may not be able to offer these higher wages. They may face competition from other states, and again, international competition. So we have to determine as a state whether we are going to invest taxpayer resources into compensating for that if there is truly a wage mismatch or a jobs mismatch as opposed to a skills mismatch.
We are talking about a skills gap study in Wisconsin. The report is called Examining the Skills Gap in Wisconsin, and our guest is one of the co-authors of it. Phil Sletten is one of four UW-Madison graduate students who worked on this report. If you have a question or a thought on the skills gap, let us know, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Again, the headline of the report is that a skills gap largely does not exist in Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to be mostly sunny with highs in the low to mid-70s. It'll be a little cooler, mid to upper 60s near the Great Lakes. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up after a 17-15 vote in the State Senate, the State Assembly is poised to pass a bill that would require women seeking an abortion to get an ultrasound first. We will hear from two different guests with different views on that legislation coming up in our next hour. Right now, we are talking about the skills gap in Wisconsin and a new report that says the skills gap really doesn't exist. Our guest is Phil Sletten, who is one of the co-authors of the report. Phil, before we take another call, we really didn't talk about... We talked just now about welding, and you did mention that there could be a skills gap of sorts in maybe some computer technology fields. But you said of the nine different areas that you examined, you didn't really see a looming skills gap. What were some of those in-demand areas?
Right. So some of the in-demand areas included registered nursing, general and operations managers, hairdressers, hairstylists, and cosmetologists, elementary school teachers, middle and high school teachers, accountants and auditors, nursing aides and orderlies and attendants, human resources, labor relations and training specialists, and then computer and information system workers. Those were the nine areas that we looked at. And we found skills gaps in middle and high school teachers, human resources, labor relations and training specialists, and computer and information system workers. And the middle and high school teacher skills gap that we found, based on our projection, was 50. So there would be 50 jobs in the state that would be opened up that wouldn't be supplied by the skills in the workforce, based on the degrees that people have attained, wouldn't be supplied by the state workforce. So that's probably within the margin of error for our study, but you know that's a small skills gap. For human resources, labor relations, and training specialists, we found a skills gap of about 2,500 positions. And then for computer and information system workers, we found a skills gap of about 11,500 positions. And again, this is over the course of the year 2012 to the year 2020. So these are positions that we project are in both high demand, require some level of educational attainment beyond a high school degree, be it a certificate or some college or bachelor's, master's, et cetera, and that the state workforce is, in terms of the supply, is going to be falling a little bit short. There are other studies out there that agree with us on the computer and information systems, but there are other places where we differ from other studies.
Let's take some more calls. Jim in Kenosha. Hi, Jim.
Hello. It seems as though in our country there's a disconnect between the work field and the public schools compared to other countries. Many countries have a real career education program where students start early in school, maybe as early as middle school, and begin some type of training efforts. But we've developed a system that seems to just pretty much wait till people are out of school I've seen several different programs where there are business specific businesses that have really done a good job, and a couple of industries like the automotive industry, which does a good job of really working with the schools, supplying funding for students, incentives for students to go into the field, jobs, apprenticeships, or internships for students. But most fields seem to just, including the medical field, and doctors, for instance, seem to just throw up their hands and blame schools for not producing students, but they don't get involved and they don't make it a financial priority. When times get bad, many places, trying to reach their profit margin, just need to cut the internships for students. And so we used to have a program, Carl Perkins, from the federal government, which has been cut, and more other state programs have been cut. And so the situation is, in terms of career education, is even getting worse.
You have a comment on that, Phil?
Yeah, so part of our recommendations are that the state policies that are in place now, which do experiential learning, be it in high school or in other levels of education, in terms of apprenticeships, internships, site visits to workplaces, we recommend expanding those because we think that extension of the school into the workplace, as opposed to potentially school to more school, which is good for many people, but may not be good for everybody. But we want to give everybody the opportunity to go to more school. But we also want to make sure that people are aware of the workforce and different occupations that they could have in the workforce. And that sort of experience may either guide further schooling to the extent of further schooling or to the type of further schooling. And a comment on what other countries do. We have a system in this country that promotes some level of flexibility that matches our labor force a little bit more than it may in other countries, and also matches our specific, system of unemployment, which is designed to be very temporary, as opposed to support someone throughout a recession, for example, with a specific skill set. So that's a very fundamental question in terms of how we want to shift our educational focus in terms of the whole labor market. And it's a question that we should be asking. The caller brings up that should our education system be tooled a little bit more towards focusing on specific industries earlier, or should it be tooled more towards flexibility? And those are big questions that are beyond the scope of our study.
Yeah. We're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
Phil Sletten, one of four UW-Madison graduate students who worked on the report Examining the Skills Gap in Wisconsin. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing this hour and for on-air production. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air direction. And thank you for listening. Also, thanks to the listener who said we should do a show on this particular report during our June open line. You ask, and sometimes you receive. Coming up, we'll talk about ultrasounds and abortion. And after 8 o'clock, we're going to talk about alcoholism with a mother-son team who co-authored a book about their own alcoholism. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.